This is the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Back in 1942, that'd be 75 years ago, St. Louis was chosen as part of the Manhattan Project as the first place to process uranium for atomic bombs. And 75 years later, the waste, the radioactive waste, is still here in North County, in Bridgeton, in the Westlake landfill, and all along Coldwater Creek. My next guest, Rebecca Camisa, has done a movie about all of this. It's called Atomic Homefront. It's going to be screened on November 11th at the Tivoli as part of the St. Louis International Film Festival. And she joins me now. Hi, Rebecca. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm doing just great. When they were doing the processing of this in 1942, that was Mallinckrodt downtown, right?
Yes, it was the Mallinckrodt Chemical Works plant.
So how did it end up in Bridgeton?
Well, from what we understand, is that the processing of uranium, the byproduct was a lot of waste. And I think that byproduct was in the tonnage. It was in tons. And I believe they ran out of space in downtown. And there was an agreement where the stuff would be trucked up to Lambert Airport, where the Army Corps had a tract of land, which became the SLAP site, the St. Louis Airport site.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the stuff was taken. We hear stories about as the stuff was trucked up there and out there, things spilled along the way. So we have questions as to whether any of the truckers knew what it was they were hauling.
When you say spilled along the way, do you mean that there might be some radioactivity along what would have been that route that might still be there?
That's what we understand. That's what we've been told.
One of the things that struck me in the movie is the people talking about the landfill itself. And the, you know, one woman said, I'm not letting my kids out today. I know it's sunny, but the weather is going to change here. And that means the wind is going to change. And that means we're going to get that smell, that stink. When you went and filmed there, how bad was it?
Well, pretty bad. There were days we were there where it really stunk very badly, and then there were days where we didn't smell anything. But I would say most often than not, there was a smell. I mean, as soon as you would drive by or drive right into the area, you'd get this very weird chemical splash. I don't know how you could describe it, but really bad chemical smell. It was very, very bad at times.
Is that smell from something that they're trying to add to the landfill to lessen
I think the odors, and as explained in the film, it's the odors of, you know, the subsurface moldering, the fire, the underground fire, was, you know, creating the problem. And so gases were escaping through the landfill. So I'm sure the smell was a mixture of many different odors. Maybe it was sulfur dioxide one day, maybe it was benzene, maybe it was methane. I'm not really sure. I don't know the chemical makeup of what we smelled when we drove by it. However, it was the odors and the fire that made, I think, more people aware of the presence of that legacy radioactive waste that was dumped on the Westlake side of the landfill.
The thing that really got me about your movie, Rebecca, and you do a really, really good job of imparting the feeling of this, is the frustration of the people in that area, particularly a group called Just Moms, which is, what, 8-10 women who have kind of taken the lead here. And there's a moment in the movie at a hearing that reminded me of the movie Erin Brockovich, when Erin Brockovich offered water from Hinckley and its poisoned wells to representatives from PG&E who were saying, there's nothing wrong with the water. Oh, well, we brought that in especially for you. Why don't you have a sip? And that it gets a great laugh. Well, in your movie, you have EPA representatives who are at this hearing with these people from Bridgeton, and a woman there says, if you think it's so fine and safe here, why don't you buy a house here? Right?
Yeah, well, I think her point was she asked, would any of you buy a house here? And their immediate reaction was, oh, yes, of course. No, nothing wrong here. And, of course, the people that have been living the truth of the situation were just outraged by that statement because it's kind of a ridiculous answer. Yes, we would, absolutely, unequivocally. You wouldn't. Obviously, if you went there and realized that this landfill was there with radioactive waste and underground fire encroaching upon it and horrible smells where you couldn't open your doors every day, you wouldn't move there. I mean, I don't think people can plan barbecues. I don't think they can plan outdoor events, depending on the really bad smell, which is one thing. But another thing that happened during the course of the making of the film is that we had filmed meetings with the EPA over, you know, a period of around 10 months, 11 months, about a year. And finally, an EPA person finally admitted, oh, yeah, we see particles leaving the site. Well, never in any of those public meetings were people were ever told that. And it only was because we happened to be filming when he mentioned that to them behind closed doors. Mm. And that was such a revelation to us that they've already seen radioactive particles leave the site. Really? Which ones? In what quantity? How have they been measured? So aside from the smell and the stink of the chemicals, I'd really like to know what exactly has left that site in terms of, you know, radionuclides, particles, alpha particles being emitted from that site. I'd love to know the answer to that.
The heartbreaking part of the story to me, aside from the frustration that everyone there in those town meetings feels with these government agencies, both the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers, is that the smell may be bad, but the cancer is worse. How many people have died of cancer in near the Westlake landfill in Bridgeton in a long Coldwater Creek? Do we even know?
Well, I mean, listen, it's very hard to say how many people have died because of what. Have there been the proper epidemiological studies? Forget cancer. Just in terms of the air quality and the chemicals coming off there, what about the autoimmune problems? What about breathing problems? What breathing problems are children experiencing? Like, aside from the C word, cancer, what other diseases, conditions have occurred due to this kind of toxicity? And one has to ask oneself that question. In terms of numbers, I'd love to answer you. I'd love to say, yeah, I know how much stuff got trucked, how much stuff got dumped, the widespread nature of the contamination. I have no idea. These things have not been measured. And hopefully there will be a proper epidemiological study, not only in terms of what's going on at the landfill, but Coldwater Creek. I mean, Coldwater Creek preceded the dumping in 1973 of radioactive waste in the Bridgeton area. So there's also the issue of people with cancers, rare cancers, birth defects, all sorts of problems in the Florissant area, in the Coldwater Creek community. And that's another aspect of the film that is really important. You know, people for decades were exposed to this stuff and never knew.
Mm-hmm. Kids just trying to run across the creek or swim across the creek. Or, you know, every time they would touch it, they were getting exposed to stuff that was not good for their bodies.
Well, I mean, aside, you know, listen, what do kids do? I know what I did when there's a water source in the back of my, you know, house. We'd run in it, we'd play in it, we'd fish in it.
Sure.
But forget going to the creek. St. Louis is a floodplain, so when it rained, the creek flooded, it went over its banks, and it flooded into basements, vegetable gardens, people's yards, probably businesses. So aside from playing in the creek, what about the flooding that took that stuff into people's homes?
The landfill.
How do you measure that? How do you measure that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's... Here's.
I mean, the Army Corps of Engineers is testing people's backyards along the creek. I don't have a recent number as to how many homes have tested positive, but considering what we've seen in the last 3 years, chances are that number will rise, although I don't have those statistics.
But here's the most shocking thing of all here, Rebecca. We're talking about this in 2017. You made this movie over the last couple of years. You met these people. You were in that area. You were going to these meetings with the EPA and the Corps of Engineers and the Missouri Department of Natural Resources and all these other agencies that are involved. But this is not something that happened in 2013 or 2014, and so it's been a couple of years, and so we're still trying to figure out how to do this. This started, well, you just mentioned, it was brought to that area in 1973.
Yes.
And you even say in the movie that the landfill was given Superfund status in 1990. By the way, what does that mean, Superfund status?
So let's go back a little bit, and this is, you know, this is what I believe. Number one, I believe there is a radiological study by the Department of Energy, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to go back and look at my notes. But there was a radiological study where they knew this radiation was there, and it was a little outside the perimeter according to things we saw within that radiological study. This was back in 1980, 1981. So they knew the stuff was there. Instead of coming in to dig it up, it got Superfund status in 1990, and that means that the cost is shared. So it's not just the government that shares it. It's also the companies that were responsible for the dumping, responsible for the creation of the stuff in the first place. So it's a way to share financial responsibility.
Okay.
Rather than just assuming responsibility for it, since it was a weapon of war, clean it up. You know the stuff is there. There's a problem. This is an unlined landfill. And now they have a serious problem with the groundwater underneath the landfill. So you have a landfill with radiological waste in it, and below it is the groundwater, which is, from what I understand, tainted with radiation as well. Now, where is that groundwater going? What is it infiltrating? What is the pathway? Is it going how beyond the perimeter of the landfill is this contamination into the community? Have tests been done to determine how far this contamination has gone off-site? I'm still waiting for that answer, too. Is it going to happen?
Why do you think nothing's been done? Or if anything, very, very little. Let's just say, why has the problem not been solved?
Well, listen, things cost money, right? So money, I think, is a definite. Money and liability, to me, seem to be, you know, the reasons why a lot hasn't been taken care of. But there's, you know, there's also another issue, which I think is at root. This weapon was created how many years ago? It was dropped 75 years ago, are you saying, since 1945?
Yeah, 72.
So I ask you a question. In 72 years, what is the answer to radioactive waste? How do we make it inert? How do we make it less dangerous? How do we contain it? Have we successfully done so? What do we do with this waste? Guess what? In 72 years, there hasn't been anything done to neutralize this stuff, to make it non-toxic. Yeah. No one really knows what to do with this stuff. And you know what? I'd like to just sit here and say, you know, poor St. Louis. Well, guess what? As we're traveling with this film, we're going across the nation, and there are other sites around this country that are grappling with the same problem. We just came back from Los Angeles. There's, in the area of San Clemente, Oceanside area of California, they are wanting to proceed with dumping, or in barrels, 1,800 tons of radioactive waste on a beach. Or 125 feet away from a beach. Are you kidding me?
No.
Does that sound like a reasonable temporary, containment area?
No.
Are you crazy? Right. So just on the head of it, just from a common sense standpoint, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, give you numbers and science. Just from a common sense standpoint, does that really make sense to you to bury that stuff or to keep it there? No. Where do we take it? Where is it going to go?
Well,
that's the problem. No one really knows what to do with this stuff.
But in the meantime, we've got lives at risk here. And I, frankly, when it comes to saving all these families, generations of families, literally, that have been in that area, we're talking about hundreds or thousands of lives that are and have been at risk. Shouldn't the government at least come in and say, look, we know you can't sell your home because nobody's going to buy a house in this area, knowing that this stuff is burning under the ground and the nuclear fuel is giving off this radioactivity. So since you can't resell your home, we will buy it and make sure no one lives here again until we figure this thing out.
Right. I love what you're saying, but, you know,
isn't that what they did?
Is that answer?
Isn't that what they did at Love Canal?
Well, as a matter of fact, if what I understand is correct, yeah, Love Canal. There's still people living there. More people are getting contaminated, and I think there's still a baseball field that people play on.
Oh.
So listen. I think there's problems with plutonium in communities in Denver, Colorado, which is where we were. You know, this is not just a St. Louis problem. That's number one. Number two, all these questions that you have for me today, I've had the same questions for authorities, agencies, elected officials. I have all the same questions you do, and guess what? None of them would talk to us on camera.
Yeah.
None of them would go and do an interview with us on camera. So guess what? I don't have answers to your very appropriate questions. The one agency that actually was generous enough to let us film with them was the Army Corps of Engineers. They're in Los Angeles right now remediating radioactive waste. That's their mandate. That's what they do. That's the FUSRAP program. They're the only ones that filmed with us. All the others wouldn't go on camera. So I have probably a gabillion questions I'd like answered.
Yeah.
And no one will answer them because they won't talk to us.
You have a clip in the movie of my colleague McGraw-Milhaven here on KTRS, who was talking on the air with a vice president from Republic Services, which is the waste company that owns the landfill. And he was asked, you know, whether the fire that's still burning there and is creeping towards the nuclear waste, whether the fire will reach the waste before a barrier is built. And he just kind of nonchalantly said, oh, no, it'll never get there. Which seemed like it was a non-scientific guess on his part.
Well, his job is to just make everything sound great.
Yeah.
Also, there's a reason why we use McGraw-Milhaven's clips in our film. And we're very grateful that they gave them to us. Because, and you're speaking about Russell Naki from Republic Services.
Yes.
Russell Naki appeared on his show, answered questions, and was on with him. Well, we've asked Republic Services a multitude of times for a tour, for, you know, guided tour, interview, anything, and they've refused us. So we had to actually rely on the only records of this man saying what he said about the fire and the proximity to the waste. And guess what? It was the McGraw-Milhaven show that was able to at least provide us for this man on camera, you know, going on record. And I just think it's ironic. The man kept saying 2,500 feet, and then all of a sudden at that EPA meeting in August of, I believe, 2016, they admit to 700 feet. That was back in August of 2016. So what is it, 2,500 feet or 700 feet? Who's telling the truth? Who's not? I don't know. It's just one grand mess. It's madness. And, of course, who is getting harmed? The regular working class, working people, taxpayers of, you know, of North County.
Yep.
They're the ones who are getting it. And it's really, it's an outrage. It's an outrage.
Absolutely right. Has HBO picked up the rights to your documentary?
Yes, HBO is going to be airing our film. I don't have an air date that I can share with you at this moment, but HBO will be broadcasting the film. And we're glad for a national broadcast because, you know, what St. Louis is suffering should be national news.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also what people in St. Louis are suffering, in North County, St. Louis are suffering, many communities throughout the United States are suffering too, and they're not necessarily getting, you know, people aren't necessarily hearing about what they're struggling through. So the U.S. broadcast, the HBO broadcast, is very important for this film because it allows other communities across the country to start going, oh, wait, this sounds very familiar. Oh, okay, this is how people are working to get answers from electeds and from the authorities and agencies whose mandate it is to protect them, which I question highly.
Yeah, not only is it their mandate to protect them, but not to poison them in the first place. And that's really what this is about, as far as I'm concerned. You connect the dots in the movie, and the other people around the country are beginning to as well. This is the United States government doing things that ended up poisoning citizens for generations and has not found a way to solve the problem and save those lives. In the meantime, before it gets on HBO, Atomic Homefront, Rebecca's documentary, will be shown on November 11th at the Tivoli as part of the St. Louis International Film Festival. You can get the full schedule of movies at cinemastlouis.org. Rebecca, nice work on the movie, and thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you very much. May I say one more thing?
Sure.
One quick thing. I just want to thank the people that we filmed making this movie. They shared the most private and painful moments of their life.
Yeah.
They trusted us. They allowed us into their homes. They allowed us into their meetings to see what was going on, and we are eternally grateful for that. So we hope this film serves the community.
Absolutely. This is the Big 550 KTRS.